Welcome to Season 2 of the Just for a Change podcast, powered by the Bertha Center for Social Innovation and Entrepreneurship. We love hearing and sharing stories about social innovation happening both locally and outside our borders in the Global South. In Season 2, we put the spotlight on the changemakers behind some incredibly innovative approaches and solutions for creating systemic change. And we're also curious to find out what keeps them going. Join us as we discover how these changemakers are changing the way we're changing the world. Welcome to Season 2, the Just for a Change podcast, with me, your host, Fergus Turner. In Nairobi, Kenya, I was amazed to see a 3D printing business set up on a street corner, merrily printing everyday objects for passers-by, recalls Ramesh Srinivasan in his article on tech website Wired. Their custom 3D printers, which make everything from medical devices to household appliances, were cobbled together from circuits and wires salvaged from dumps and recycling centers. Not only are they a fraction of the cost of Chinese and even American printers, they are also far more robust and resilient, able to withstand the heat, noise, and elements of this East African country. Why? Because they were designed by Kenyans for their local environment and fellow countrymen. Not all entrepreneurs are created equal. Sure, we all admire the entrepreneurial work that gets done in Silicon Valley and Sweden, and we'd struggle to get by without some of the innovations that make their way from the north to the south. With massive capital behind them, they make it look so easy. In Africa and the global south, however, the narrative is different. Being an entrepreneur in Africa requires perseverance and passion. It's not an easy road to embark upon. Due to the lack of funding structures, youth entrepreneurship policies, networks, skills training, and mentorship. And then, of course, the red tape that comes with registering a business. Today, we are zooming in on an initiative that catalyzes high-impact entrepreneurship in Africa, namely Jasiri. Jasiri selects, develops, and invests in high-potential aspiring entrepreneurs and guides program participants from idea generation, validation, prototyping, all the way to venture creation. Supported by the Alan and Jill Gray Foundation, Jasiri believes that catalyzing high-impact entrepreneurial success requires a patient, holistic, and contextualized approach. Programs are designed to systematically identify and remove regionally specific potential stumbling blocks on the entrepreneurial journey of an individual, team, and business. What makes it so outstanding is the fact that Jasiri is not about simply funding the idea phase of promising entrepreneurial ventures. Instead, they commit to a year-long journey with the fellows, focusing on holistic development of the individual as well as the business. Jasiri has been working with the Bertha Center for Social Innovation and Entrepreneurship to embed a systems approach into their program. 30 fellows from across Rwanda and Kenya have been participating in this program. And today I'm so excited to be talking to Daniel Hampton, Head of Programs at Jasiri, Akilisa Keza Ntwari, Jasiri Program Lead, Brian Simuyu, and Peace Iragua, who are current Jasiri Fellows. Thank you so much, Daniel, Akilisa, Brian, and Peace for being with us today. I'm really very excited for this exchange, for this conversation, especially after having been honored to share alongside colleague Kentse Khadebe some of the journey with you and your team. But before we move any further into the real meat of the topic, I wanted to first refer back to this word, this name, Jasiri. Back in the beginning, the first session where we were all together back in April, there was a real exploration of why Jasiri? What does this mean? And so before we get going, I'd like to ask if each of you could just introduce yourselves and introduce what Jasiri means to you at this stage of the program. And I'd like to kick off with Brian.
For me, Jasiri means that it is possible. And we have to be bold enough as African entrepreneurs to internalize that it is possible. In fact, I will quickly quote a sentence that I borrowed from Jasiri and is very quickly becoming one of my favorites. It's called the Schramm's Law. For our audience, that's spelled S-C-H-R-A-M-M, and it argues the single most important contributor to a nation's economic growth is the number of startups that grow to $1 billion in revenue within 20 years. As far as African system change is concerned, especially from the perspective of the entrepreneur, I think this will be one of the most important tenets for the remainder of the century.
What Jasiri is about is now taking over the whole ecosystems, changing the systems, and making Africa a better place for everyone.
Yes, well, Peace and Brian have put it so beautifully. What these young entrepreneurs are doing in these times is incredibly brave. It's incredibly brave nowadays just to walk out your door, but to now take that decision to start a business and to commit to this program all this time, and to take the chance on meeting a co-founder. It's very exciting, but it's a huge risk as well.
Absolutely. If there was ever a time where being bold and reaching for those heights of ambition that make systems change a possibility, then now is probably the most challenging of times. But over to you, Daniel, as head of program design at Jasiri. What has that word come to represent for you, and how does that sort of describe the relevance of this program at this time?
Primarily, it's a call. It's a call to the potential entrepreneurs that that we want to try and guide into entrepreneurship. And as Akhilesa said, it's a massive thing. It requires full commitment, what we're asking, and particularly our focus on market creating innovations, that it requires a commitment to the unknown for the fellows, for the potential entrepreneurs as well. It requires a deep dive into areas where often there's not a lot of precedent, where there's not a lot of immediate data available, and a full commitment to that. And that's really what we're trying to get to with the word, is that it really it's a jump off the cliff, full commitment, and seek out the way to build the plane on the way down.
Thank you for that, Daniel. I think it's very clear that from the onset, you and your team has put a lot of attention into the personal and individual experiences of an inspiring entrepreneur, recognizing that internal process is just as important as the process of building those market creating innovations and doing the requisite research and tools building and practice building. And this focus on this internal sort of personal development seems to be a hallmark of the program. Of course, the program runs over the course of a full 12-month track. And in a way, one could say that there's the pre-business talent investor period of the program, and then the accelerator, which of course, again, being the inaugural program, Jasiri program, this is, as you say, this is also the program itself is building the plan as we go. But if you could talk a little more about these two segments of the program, and perhaps a little more detail about what a Jasiri fellow may experience in the process of engaging in this program and cohort.
Great. So I think there are two stages along the journey. I think that, and the accelerator program is and accelerator programs in general are quite known quantities. I think that's not an area where we're going to be doing much different from what you might see in other accelerator programs. So the accelerator program will start once the teams have got a sense that they've found a solution that really works, where they've run as many tests as they need to really think that they've got something worth building on. And that's a process of then formalizing that and making sure that they have everything they need in order to turn that into a business that can grow beyond that. Where we're focused at the moment and the talent investor is really the less known quantity and where we're focusing the bulk of our attention, and really where the innovation is coming in. And that's as you've explained it, the definition of a talent investor, which are there are various of these popping up, is that a talent investor seeks out an individual and focuses on an individual, not a business. So it specifically looks for people who are not currently running a business. They may have some ideas. They may we look for people that have deep expertise within an area, but that aren't yet working on an idea, haven't settled on an idea, and haven't yet started a business. And there's a couple of reasons for that, and a couple of reasons why that's really important within the African context in particular. And that's the confluence there is high potential entrepreneurs or really kind of talented young Africans tend to face significant challenges that are quite different from their Western counterparts in being able to take the initial steps into entrepreneurship. And I think that's why we see overwhelmingly that high impact, high growth entrepreneurs tend to be from Western countries at the moment. And a lot of the reason for that is that first couple of years, where there really needs to be the space to be able to explore, to fail, to try things out, the entrepreneurs in more developed countries tend to be funded by families. They tend to be funded by fairly easygoing, fairly relaxed capital that's close to them, that allows them that space, where the people providing that capital are more interested in them as individuals than they are in any kind of return in the short term. But what we mostly see, or we see a lot in the African continent, is that there's a lot of first-generation graduates within this really talented pool of people that have the capacity to be able to build a big, internationally relevant, high-growth business. And they've got a lot of responsibilities to their family rather than the other way around. And so that risk profile for them to be able to potentially not have an income extends beyond them. And so that barrier to entry for the most talented people that are really needed in order to grow these kind of businesses is that much higher. So the vehicle of a talent investor, that allows us to step into that space. It allows us to identify those people that the biggest impact they can be making on the continent and on the world is in entrepreneurship, but their personal circumstances may not allow that kind of space to be able to have that that period of time to find, to kind of dig beneath the obvious, to look into systems, to try to find those opportunities that are really worth exploring. So what we want to do is really to empower that group of people to be able to jump into entrepreneurship and to give them the space to experiment. I think that obviously becomes much the other aspects here is that we've got a lot of asymmetrical and non-existent market data on the continent, or at least it's the market data is very scant in comparison to other markets, and so that actually requires even more time to really dig in to try and find these big opportunities. But it also means that there's a larger possibility for opportunity, because that lack of data is both a hindrance and it's an opportunity, as it's a barrier to entry for other companies, for other organizations. So we really want to provide this kind of patient time, this blank slate, and this full focus to really high potential entrepreneurs, for them to be able to dig in and build a company that's really worth building.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's remarkable, even just in listening you describe it through these lenses. It's remarkable to see the degree to which the program all at once focuses so much on that context, that experience, that individual reality in the entrepreneurial space and entrepreneurial experience, but at the same time has such a systems-oriented approach to looking at market-creating innovations, to looking at the kinds of undiscovered markets and opportunities that exist and which may be levers for massive change. But coming back to this personal experience of the entrepreneur and the groundedness of the program, I wanted to ask you, Akilize, if you could share a little more, perhaps a couple of examples of the kinds of questions problem areas, opportunities, challenges that teams and fellows are currently looking at, just to give our audience a sense of how to hook into the material that the fellows, the GCRE fellows, are dealing with.
It's been really exciting to see how many different ideas have come up, how many different spaces they're working in. We have several teams looking into the financial space. Obviously, technology is probably coming into play in every single team that we've seen formed. So there's fintech, edtech, biotechnology. It's been very broad. What I think they found the most, well, I'll allow Peace and Brian probably to answer what they found the most useful. But just from the outside looking in, I think it's this prospecting stage that they've been going through, that we've begged them to be patient and slow in that process. Really getting to know who their customer is, and also just encouraging them not to be too hooked on the solution at the beginning, and really tear it apart and present it to each other, and be open to feedback, and to sort of have this mindset whereas, you know, for myself, I also have the experience of being in entrepreneurship programs, and usually the idea is that you have this solution already packaged and you're coming and presenting it, and you have to be ready to defend it at all costs, and that's the only way you're going to get your funding. Whereas in this program, we're encouraging them to present it, but to be very open to the feedback from their fellows and from the different facilitators we're working with, and to be prepared to throw it out the window and go back to the drawing board, and to be comfortable with that, and to recognize that as a healthy approach, and that they should carry with them throughout their journeys, even beyond GCRE. So that, I think that's what I've been finding the most exciting and interesting to watch.
Thank you so much. That merging that courage, boldness of GCRE with the patience and curiosity can sometimes, I'm sure, feel like quite a tension and feel quite at odds. So over to you, Peace. Brian, if you could share from your perspective, how has this program been for you, both personally, but also as budding entrepreneurs yourselves?
So I'm privileged that instead of having to travel to Silicon Valley or Shanghai to internalize some of these concepts, GCRE has managed to create a safe space of diverse entrepreneurs, brilliant minds, I should add, where you can grow as an individual, guided by a mentor who helps you with self-coping, and as a team where you're coached by world-class facilitators, such as those who are represented by the Bartha Center, who help you with your idea progression. And furthermore, for your opportunity assessment, you have leading industry players who consult and advise you accordingly through a brain trust model. And personally, if I were to be honest, I don't think it gets any better in the continent. I believe this will be one of the most remarkable initiatives moving forward.
Thank you, Brian. Peace.
Okay, so for me, I'll say first, I consider myself lucky to be part of the first cohort of the program. As I said earlier, I believe GCRE to be a move. We have first amazing facilitators. We have access to experts in the field, mentors all the way. And as Akaliza was saying, we the approach we're going with is really different from what has been being done, because they give us time first to fall in love with the problem. And I really believe that affects on a huge percentage the solution you're going to come up with, the sustainability of the solution you're going to come up with. So we're given time, no pressure. You sit down, get to understand the problem, talk to your customers, get the guidance you need. The facilitators are there all the way, and also the mentorship. So you have everything. You have everything to come up with a great market creating innovation.
Yeah, there's a catch saying in design thinking that goes something like a well-defined problem is more valuable than a badly defined solution. And similarly, in the systems practitioner literature, they say that the more time we're able to really spend empathizing and connecting with the problem, with the market, with the environment that we are curious about, the more we're able to recognize our own part in it, our own part in that environment, in that ecosystem, rather than seeing ourselves as these objective outsiders trying to solve for one particular solution. I want to drill down a little more, Brian, to your experience as it pertains to your specific problems, your specific systems that you are looking at. Just again, to give our audience a sense, an idea of the kinds of questions and challenges that you're looking at. So, Brian, again, over to you. If you could just give us an insight or an idea, a window into what you and your team are looking at.
We're using big data as a lens to solve problems inherent in financial literacy, to be exact. And the way I'd speak to it, well, it will be by saying that globally, entrepreneurs innovate. That's what entrepreneurs do. And there's a lot of focus on the disruptive element in the developed world when talking innovation, because there's a lot of incumbents that need to be nudged or displaced entirely. Here in Africa, there is a need, they're far in between. They're indeed far in between, the so-called incumbents. So Africa needs innovations that focus on struggles that directly inhibit consumption. Keywords here have to be struggle that a lot of Africans are familiar with, and non-consumption, coming from the aforementioned inhibited consumption. Also, a very common theme in the continent. In this sense, at Jasiri, we turn a lot to the Clayton Christensen Institute framework of market-creating innovations that speak a lot to these concerns. I should add that these are not exact sciences, and as a team, we're not moving as such, but we know that they're a great guide to the lighthouse, and we feel we'll get there.
This relationship between systems change and entrepreneurship is something that we at the Bertha Center are obviously very curious about. So over to you, Dan, if you could share a little more about your thoughts and perhaps some of your learnings over the course of this program thus far about the role of entrepreneurship as a catalyst for systems change. At first glance, it seems obvious, but what are some of the deeper insights that perhaps have come to you over the course of this program so far?
With the lens of looking at entrepreneurship and systems change, I think something that's been quite interesting is no matter the fact that we've taken this we're about the most kind of, in terms of timelines, patient program that I think I've ever seen. But I think given the complexities of digging into systems and trying to get really to the core of problems in an environment that's not got a lot of immediately available data, really does take time. And I think we've got another lens now to just how much time and how much effort is needed in these early stages. And that, together with this extra complication of having this cohort find each other, find the community, kind of make the connections they need to make with each other, which are also just incredibly important in their journey forward, and in finding the mix of competencies and the mix of backgrounds, the mix of experience that really works for them to make something special. But this is something that can't be rushed, and I think as we've moved through this, we're getting an even deeper sense of just how much time is necessary to allow the space to play and space to explore and space to experiment, both in building those relationships and then in looking outward into the markets, into the communities around, as we prospect for that hidden gold.
Thank you so much, Daniel. I was wondering, speaking of this process of application, for prospective fellows, for candidates. Peace, if you could share, you know, recognizing that you associate Jasiri with this idea of it's a call. Well, in that case, who is the ideal Jasiri candidate? What kind of characteristics, so that those listening can understand and get a feeling for whether they connect and resonate with the idea of becoming a Jasiri fellow? If you could just share with us a little more about how you would characterize the ideal candidate for the program.
I'd say an ideal candidate for the program first has to be brave, as the name says, because as Daniel said, it's even the selection process is as far as possible from easy, but so as also coming up with market creating innovation is not easy. So you have to be brave. You have to have the hunger, because it requires a deep drive for you to first get selected, but then the work now comes when you're selected. You have to put in the efforts. You have to understand what you're actually after. So you have to have that hunger of engaging in nation building, changing the systems, and going for something bigger.
So I wonder, Daniel, if you could tell us a little bit more about the selection process, and perhaps for our listeners to know a little bit more about how they can be involved or find out more or even apply.
The applications are already open for cohort 2. Our selection process, I'm sure Peace and Brian would fill you in on. It's a pretty laborious thing to get through. We're trying as hard as possible in our selection process to make it as objective as we can, and as repeatable as we can in terms of trying to identify this kind of fuzzy concept of entrepreneurial potential. And we've got a lot of history with this. The Alan Gray Orbis Foundation in South Africa has been following a similar model for nearly 15 years now. And I think the starkest way to kind of put this is, I think most of the programs that you see of this nature, these kind of selection programs, are based off an interview with a company director or similar, and really rely a lot on chemistry and gut reaction of those making the decisions. And we're really trying to bring as much scientific rigor as we can and as much research as we can to the process. So it's this balance of psychometric evaluations, of looking at past experience, of looking at kind of depth of knowledge within an industry, looking at entrepreneurial intention, the level of ambition, and we try and use as far as possible tools that are repeatable, tools that are objective, tools that cross cultures, so that we know that we're getting a cohort that really does have the competencies, the backgrounds that we need, and that it's a process that we can repeat and repeat and repeat. So it does require a lot of time. It requires a lot of effort. It's quite a learning experience for anyone who does apply. So even those who don't make it through into the final group, the selection process has been structured as a learning journey and as a journey of self-discovery that brings a lot of value to those even who don't make it through the various stages. So that is open. The application is up on our website at jasiri.org.
Thank you all for making this happen, first and foremost. It's been an absolute pleasure. And Daniel, Akiliza, Brian, Peace, thank you so much for being on Just for a Change this afternoon. We really appreciate your time.
Hi, this is Kinsi Khadebe hosting this Positive Outlook segment. The entrepreneurship space is broad and dynamic. While Jasiri focuses on entrepreneurs with past experience, be that from the corporate world or from past entrepreneurial ventures, the Raymond Ackerman Academy, also known as RAA, focuses on preparing and mobilizing another group of entrepreneurially minded, or perhaps just creative, curious people, those finishing high school and others who have had limited access to tertiary opportunities. RAA is a post-matric level academy that offers an inspiring and innovative 6-month full-time program in entrepreneurial development. The course empowers young people by developing them personally, building their entrepreneurial mindsets, and teaching them business skills. Ultimately, the Academy wishes to assist individuals with creating their personal and entrepreneurial vision. The approach is to grow the person, then the business. Today, I'm excited to chat to Ayanda Gcuba, an RAA alumni who launched ABC Concepts, a lifestyle marketing tourism startup based in the heart of Khayelitsha. Ayanda, welcome to the Just for a Change podcast. We're really delighted to have you here with us. I think I'm particularly excited because a couple of weeks ago, we'd met with some of the RAA team members and they were chatting about the program and how amazing it is. And we were all having FOMO, just listening to what the entrepreneurial process and support is like. So I wanted to just maybe start right there at the beginning of your journey with RAA. How did you find out about the program? What motivated you to apply?
It's a mouthful, to be honest, but Ingosi, I'm Kinsey for this time and recapping, because I think it was 7 years ago now. And with the RAA, I have a couple of friends who are within my circle that were graduates. And for me, what was really interesting was they went to the program and they came out like doing like super great, cool ideas. And somehow I became curious. Like when I met Usiz, we're doing years of Express, I was like, wait, what is this? And then I met Lufefe talking a lot about the spinach bread. And then Umeli had recently just launched the Hub Space. I was like, wait, are all you guys like graduates from the RAA? So what's happening there? So I had FOMO basically. And I kind of went on a whim, decided to apply, and went on the interview. And I think it was one of the best decisions that I think we make for ourselves, because it was my own personal experience. As much as the guys had gone through the program before me, but when I was there, I got a different experience. So I too, at the end of the 6 months, became an alumni, and we were all now RAA graduates, not just friends, but everyone. We all came through the same academy, basically.
Sure. Ayanda, it's so amazing that you list all of these people. I'm getting like FOMO hearing you speak about the different people that have come through this program. But when you mention all of these people, you make me think about something that I'm constantly thinking about whenever I'm eKhayelitsha or eLanga, is about how our townships are really these spaces that bring together people in community, but also are real entrepreneurial ecosystems. And we sometimes don't think about them as those kinds of spaces. What role do you think entrepreneurship has to play in our own communities, but also around being a systems catalyzer for South Africa?
For the best part, I think independence is one of the biggest things that everyone like strives for. I really feel that at a certain age, we always aspire to have control. And for most of us, having that opportunity to just kickstart your idea or start a business gives you some kind of in an independent feeling, where in our communities, where a lot of people are highly reliant on jobs, whether it's in government, whether it's in the public sector, you being able to create for yourselves gives you that room to not only create something that's meaningful for yourself, but also something that in the end of the day gets shared with your community and just kickstart a process of inspiring other young people. So I just believe entrepreneurship as a whole gives us, as township dwellers, the opportunity to really start putting the building blocks to reshaping our societies. And for our generation in particular, compared to our parents, we're much more socially driven. So we try to address a lot of the ills that we see around us through creative solutions. And that's how we then play our role to make sure that the next generation has a start.
Sure. There's so much that you're saying there that resonates with me, but I think maybe this is a good opportunity for us to tell us a little bit about your company, ABC Concepts. How did it come together? We know that you also have a business partner, Ubuntu Matole. What was that journey like?
We met day one at the RAA, strangely enough. And he introduced himself thinking he was the only one from eKhayelitsha. And he always had this tagline, "Hi everyone, my name is Ubuntu from eKhayelitsha," just wanting to own that. And strangely enough, I was sitting in the back because I've always been that kid. Like I've enjoyed the back seat, whether it was in the bus, whether it was in the classroom, because it was kind of like you don't get the attention, but you keep up with everyone else who's sitting at the front. So when we met, we vibed based on the energy that we were all like giving off. But also, I think it was a time where most of us were really looking for peer motivation. So on Saturdays, we'd all get together, we'd work through assignments, we'd basically assist one another on some of the things that we saw lacking. Like if I was good in computers or if I had been exposed to laptops longer than my friend. So I'm there to just show you, give you a few pointers, or if you were exposed to a different industry or space, like it was just that. So 2015, we came together and was like, fam, what are you doing? Now the program is over. And it was like, I just want to do something positive for my community. He was wanting to do something with sports. I'd been doing something with events in the past. So I was like, we might as well try out sports events and then try and also work with schools. And in the process, test it out, just see where this goes. So ABCD was the name we chose when we had to be formally registered. We didn't think about what the business was going to become. We just knew we want to do everything right from the get-go. And we want to have a registered entity so that whenever we have to comply, we have the right documents. And then we rolled with the punches, new opportunities came. We weren't shy on embracing those opportunities. We just took everything as a learning experience and decided to evolve the business. The mature it became, and the older, I think the more older we got, the more experience we had, the learnings. Hey, the first year, zero income. Like it was all pure passion. Like the transport was the two series that is our food. We would walk everywhere the first year, but then you learn and you just, I think you learn to get through the hard times by embracing the change, but also by just taking on the hardships. If it was easy from the get-go, I don't think we would have been where we are right now, basically.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Fantastic work. Ayanda, can you tell us a little bit more about ABCD Concepts, your business model? What is it that you do? And what are some of the organizations that you've collaborated with?
So we basically, I think we sell access. That's what I say. And when I say we sell access through meaningful experiences that people get to have in communities like Ekhayelitsha. And that could be either be a tour, that could either be like an educational, that could even be like a partnership, like what we did with Airbnb, where we were working with them on the Airbnb Africa Academy, an opportunity like for anyone who wants to venture and become a tourism entrepreneur, basically. We started on Airbnb back in 2016, actually, when they were launching experiences in South Africa, and South Africa was listed as like the one of the few countries globally to now start having experiences. And in Cape Town was like the only destination in the country at the time. And we were the only guys coming from Ekhayelitsha to have an experience. And I think a handful of guys from any township. So that was like our kickstart into the whole tourism industry. And from there, we had to pivot and become tourism entrepreneurs as well. So we've been it for a minute now. And I think we've had a bigger impact where we've partnered up with Cape Town Tourism. We've worked recently with SA Tourism, where we shot something on Espresso. We've worked with Remote Year, which is a one-year trip around the world where you get to live and work remotely in like 10 different countries. So we host them when they are here in Cape Town, in partnership with their Cape Town base. And yeah, we've even worked with Mr. Gay World, where we did the first ever township triathlon. Which is just unpacking like the three tourism components that we have, which is cycling, running, and walking. But for us, we just had to make it feel like it's an authentic township concept. So the guys jogged a seven kilometer distance, took bikes from the Spinach King. They cycled a 3 kilometer distance, and then they had to walk up the walkway, which is at the Lookout Hill, to get to the top. So we've been trying to push the boundaries in terms of like how we have people experience township specifically, because as much as South Africa is a beautiful country, we don't feel that outside of Soweto or other communities are given the same recognition where they thrive and they really start owning that their identity. So we're trying to push Ekhayelitsha to be like that as well.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much, Ayanda. It's been a pleasure chatting with you and just learning from your experiences.
Today, we have been able to look at more than one entrepreneurial journey where the models differ significantly. What we definitely can say is that no matter which door someone enters the world of entrepreneurship from, they will need a lot of scaffolding. It's not realistic to think that a person can simply jump ship, leave their paying job, and dive straight into the world of entrepreneurship. That's why programs such as what Jasiri offers, which fully funds a person for a year, is key. For someone just leaving school and joining a Raymond Ackman Academy program, for example, the dive into entrepreneurship might be slightly less daunting because they aren't necessarily putting a paying job at stake. However, that doesn't mean they need less support. With sufficient support, entrepreneurs will be critical catalysts for systems change on the African continent and other countries and cities in the global south. It's an opportunity not to be missed. Thank you for tuning in to Season 2 of the Just for a Change podcast, powered by the Bertha Center for Social Innovation and Entrepreneurship. If you're curious about what innovations are happening in Africa and the Global South, and who the movers and shakers behind these initiatives are, then make sure you subscribe so that you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes.